the Gilchrist Foundation, in support of NPR's commitment to coverage of the arts.
Andy Foldenauer joins us now from RBC Wealth Management for the Monday morning analysis of business and financial news. He's sitting in for Brian Ford. Hi, Andy.
Good morning, Wayne. Good to be here.
A big story of the week, both locally and nationally, was the surprising and unexpected defeat of Republican Congressman Eric Cantor, the House Majority Leader, in the 7th District primary election. There's plenty of political fallout from that defeat, but are there any business or investment implications?
That's a good question. Yeah, the election was definitely a shocker. You know, I think with the aftershock still being felt in and around the political circles of D.C., and I think there are plenty of political implications to be drawn that others may be more qualified to speak to than I can. But I think there are, you know, maybe a few points worth noting on the business and investment side of the equation. You know, I think it's fair to say that, you know, this result pumped some life into the Tea Party and will continue to create some division and a power struggle within the Republican Party. You know, immigration reform is one of the immediate areas that seemed to be making progress lately, but now apparently faces a much tougher road of approval, which has broader implications for the economy. You know, also Representative Cantor was a key ally for many firms on Wall Street as he received significant support from financial firms. He was known as a leading industry ally on financial-related regulation. You know, his absence will leave a power vacuum in the short term and is a loss for the financial sector, which was one of his top supporters. You know, as for investment implications, it's always the unexpected that sends the stock market for a loop. And over the past 5 years, we have had several stock-related pullbacks or sell-offs that have been caused by Washington, you know, the debt ceiling, fiscal cliff, sequestration, you know, and so forth. And while nothing is immediate, a string of unknowns are now back into play, in my opinion. You know, whether it's the power struggle within the GOP or the political muscle of the Tea Party, there is a wild card, and it involves Washington again. You know, the Tea Party is known for the past standoffs on the budget and debt ceiling, and you wouldn't be surprised to see that resurface again in the next year. So, you know, by no means am I suggesting that the political fallout would trigger a major stock market correction, but simply the potential for more gridlock in Washington is an added black cloud that will hover over the market for a while.
The escalation of violence in Iraq has been the focus of much attention over the past several days. If the conflict continues to escalate, what type of impact do you think it would have on oil prices?
Well, you know, crude oil prices jumped on the news last week and were higher by about 4.5%. You know, RBC Capital Markets analysts note that Iraq represents, you know, roughly 3.5% of the global oil production. And most of that fighting so far has taken place in northern Iraq, whereas the major oil fields are in the southern part of the country.
Mm-hmm.
So if the conflict spreads, causing Iraqi production to go offline, they estimate oil prices could jump as much as $20 a barrel, or about another, you know, 20%. And an increase like this could mean, you know, higher gas prices for American consumers, you know, which comes at a time where summer is just starting and could lead to a tapering of driving or summer travel plans.
One of the big drivers of growth for the economy lately has been the resurgence of the housing market. Now, what's the latest forecast and outlook for that industry?
Well, you know, every region in the country is different based off of local, you know, economic conditions. But, you know, by and large, home prices have advanced substantially since 2012 with the help of high demand from all cash investors. But investors are increasingly stepping to the sidelines. So for the recovery to persist, the housing market will need to shift back to basics and find more support from traditional buyers who are dependent on mortgage debt. The handing of the baton from investor buyers to traditional buyers does have a few challenges, though. The first one being access to credit has its issues. You know, banks' mortgage lending standards have loosened from 2011's ultra-tight conditions, but they are far from easy, which leads to the second challenge being first-time buyers are, you know, constantly under pressure. You know, the 25 to 34-year-old group is the primary driver of household formation and also new home buying. You better deal with higher unemployment or underemployment, and also owe much more than $1 trillion in student loans outstanding, which directly subtracts from its capacity to take on mortgage debt. You know, the third challenge is the changes to Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, which is a longer-term issue. Congressional debate about the reforms there of the government-sponsored enterprises to ensure that taxpayers will not be on the hook in another crisis may produce changes that reduce the capacity of the agencies to lend, insure, or subsidize qualification standards. But all that being said, you know, against these potential headwinds are some positive factors as well. The first one being consumers' balance sheets or net worth continue to improve, you know, primarily from the combination of rising home prices and the big move higher in stocks over the past 5 years. Second one being rising home prices that led to less homeowners underwater on their mortgage, you know, going from about 30% to 20% over the past 2 years. And employment as a whole is improving. So, you know, bottom line is I think the housing recovery will continue to move higher, but might be at a less dynamic and more uneven pace than has prevailed for the past 2.5 years.
Well, school is officially out for the summer, and I believe Saturday is the first official day of summer. Usually, the business cycle slows down a bit. Are there any stories that we should be watching for over the next few weeks?
Yeah, well, the Federal Reserve will be back in focus this week as they conduct a two-day meeting on Tuesday and Wednesday. You know, their statement or comments might help us have a peek into where, you know, interest rates are heading. I think the overall story to watch over the next few months is that central banks around the world are no longer acting in lockstep with each other. The European Central Bank and Bank of Japan are still pumping stimulus into their respective economies. China is still being accommodative, while the U.S., on the flip side, is taking its foot off the gas pedal from their stimulus plans over the past 5 years. So it'll be interesting to see how investors and the markets react to these policy changes and the impact it has on their underlying economies.
All right. Thanks to Andy Foldenauer at RBC Wealth Management, sitting in for Brian Ford. We have business news analysis at this time each Monday morning.
Thank you, Wayne.
Andy's report is not a research recommendation for any particular company and does not provide legal or tax advice. And we invite you to check out the RBC Global Insight Weekly at ideastations.org. You're listening to Morning Edition at 88.9 WCVE, Richmond Public Radio.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Linda Wertheimer.
And I'm Renee Montaigne. Good morning.